Chapter 33. Kate stood on the white asphalt roof. She could barely catch her breath. The sunlight sent needles into her eyes. She had to cover her face for a moment just to get her bearings. The door was behind her. The rail yard was to her left. Jimmy was on the ground in front of her. He saw Kate, and his eyes went wide with fear. She rushed to his side. Jimmy's hands and ankles were tied together. Sealing tape covered his mouth and was wrapped around his head. She didn't know where to start. The twine around his wrists cut into the skin. The knots were red with his blood. Kate started to pick at the threads. And then she heard a noise behind her. Kate turned. Her eyes were still playing tricks on her. She saw a gun flying through the air. A revolver, just like the one she carried on her belt. Jimmy groaned. His shoulders twitched. He was looking at the gun. Kate was looking at Maggie. Chip Bixby had his arm wrapped around her neck. A large pistol was in his hand. Kate had never seen anything like it. The barrel was at least a foot long. He had his finger resting on the trigger guard, the same as he had taught them at the gun range. "You," Kate said, because she could see it now. Everything that had made her think Terry Lawson was the shooter could also be applied to this repulsive maggot. Chip told Kate, "Thanks for running all the way up here, darling. I didn't want to have to drag you." Kate looked at the revolver lying on the roof. It was 20 feet away. "Go ahead." His voice held a challenge. "You think you can reach that gun before I pull this trigger?" Kate's hand went to her chest. She had to say the words before she truly believed them. "You're the shooter." "Smart gal."
"Kate," Maggie said, "get the gun." Kate moved because she always followed Maggie's orders. And then she stopped when Chip's finger went to the trigger. He said, "You really want to try your luck?" Kate felt something trembling against her chest. She realized it was her hand. He said, "Take a step back." Kate didn't move. She could finally see how Chip had brought all of this into play. He had told Kate to run up to the roof as fast as she could. Obviously, Jimmy was already up here. Now Maggie had a gun to her head. This was no happenstance. All of them standing on this rooftop, in this rail yard. They were all exactly where Chip wanted them to be. Maggie said, "Don't do this." Her body was stiff against Chip's. Her fingers dug into the back of his arm. "You think you're honoring Duke's memory by murdering a bunch of cops?"
"They weren't cops," Chip hissed. "They were vermin. Nigger lovers, hippies, kikes, greaseballs, fucking pansies."
His eyes were on Kate, and she knew that she was the kike he was talking about. She told him, "I'm just trying to do my job."
"Bullshit, lady. You don't even know what the job is."
His disgust was so palpable that Kate felt it like a fist clutching her heart. Chip said,
"I seen it with my old man. You let one in, they bring another and another, and pretty soon they're running the show, and your whole fucking world's upside down."
He pressed the muzzle harder against Maggie's temple.
"All I'm doing is putting things back where they belong."
Kate asked the only question that mattered.
"How is this going to end?"
"Ain't you more curious about how it all started?"
He showed his small, brown teeth in a smile.
"Think about it, baby. When did this all start for you?"
Kate didn't have to think about it. Her part in all of this began that first day on the shooting range. Chip Bixby had suggestively pressed his body against Kate's
as he'd shown her how to hold a weapon. She had been disgusted, but there was no other choice because she had to learn how to use a gun. That initial uneasiness had never really gone away. It followed her to her parents' house. It followed her around town. And lately, that initial disquiet from 6 weeks ago had grown into a full-blown feeling of paranoia. The glow of a man's cigarette outside her parents' house. The smell of smoke in her hotel room. Patrick's missing dog tags. She said, "You've been following me.
Watching you."
With a sickening clarity, Kate understood the difference. Watching implied careful attention. Watching meant you noted gestures, recorded even the most inane details. Kate thought about Chip's hands roughly grabbing her hips at the range. The rancid smell of his breath. The stench on his clothes from chain smoking. The revolting knowledge that the stiffening in his pants would probably be later remedied with Kate in mind. Was that why he was watching her? Was he gathering more fantasies? No. What was happening on this roof was no fantasy. Chip was planning to take her. "This won't work." Kate struggled to keep her voice from wavering. "Those men on the street will come up here eventually. How are you going to explain 3 dead bodies?"
"I'll tell them the truth. I chased all of you up here, but I was just a second too late. Jimmy killed Maggie, and then he knocked you out before I put a bullet in his head."
Chip started smiling again.
"Don't worry, sweetheart. I got a nice, safe room all ready for you. Ask Jimmy. You can yell as loud as you want, and nobody's gonna hear you. I'd rather die than let you touch me. We'll see how you feel in a week, Caitlin."
He grimaced at the name. "Ain't that what your mama calls you?" The breath left Kate's body.
"Put on that white nightgown. Wrap yourself in that purple blanket."
Kate's hand went to her mouth. She wore a white nightgown when she stayed at her parents' house. The purple blanket was on the end of her bed. There was a window right across the room. She left it cracked open most nights. Had Chip been standing on the other side? Had he watched her sleep? Kate's heart stopped at one particular memory. Had Chip been there the night she finished what Philip had started? Kate had left the covers off so she could feel the breeze on her skin. She had been at her most vulnerable. Her most open.
"Oh, God," Kate whispered. "What did you see?"
"You think I don't know what a dirty Jew looks like when she spreads her legs?"
Bile rushed up her throat.
"I know you, Caitlin. I know everything about you. And what I didn't know, I heard from Oma."
Kate felt punched in the stomach. Oma. How did he know her name? There was a shout from the street below. Police sirens bellowed in the distance. Chip obviously heard the sounds too. He unwrapped his arm from Maggie's neck.
"Get on your knees."
Maggie didn't move, so he pushed her down. The gun was inches from her head.
"Don't,"
Kate begged. This wasn't happening. She couldn't watch Maggie die.
"Please, we can talk about this."
"Talking time is over."
Chip unplugged Maggie's radio from her transmitter.
"You know what to do, Lawson."
Jimmy pounded his shoulder against the roof. Maggie looked at her brother. Her jaw was locked. Kate had seen her like this once before. She was resigned to her fate. She was done fighting. She laced together her fingers.
"Maggie, don't!"
Kate couldn't let this happen. The revolver was lying on the roof, less than 12 feet away. She took a step toward it. 11 feet away. Chip said, "Hands on the back of your head."
"Maggie!"
Kate took another step. 10 feet away.
"Hurry up, Lawson."
Maggie put her hands on the top of her head.
"Don't do it!"
Kate pleaded. There had to be something that she could do. Kate took another small step. 9 feet. Another step 8 feet away. 7. Kate couldn't stop counting. She always counted when she was afraid. The number of lightning strikes before the thunder. The number of times her heart beat before Patrick's plane disappeared into the sky. The number of bullets fired in the stairwell as she ran up to the roof. Kate asked Maggie,
"How many bullets are in his gun?"
Maggie said nothing, but Kate could read her thoughts. This was how it happened. This is what Chip had done to Ballard and Johnson, Keene and Porter. Kate said,
"I heard 6 shots that were louder than the others. I counted them."
Maggie turned her head toward Kate. She was dumbstruck.
"How many?"
Kate repeated.
6.
Kate lunged for the revolver. There was nothing graceful about the movement. Her shoulder slammed into the roof as she scooped up the gun. She was too late. Chip pulled the trigger. Click, click. Kate had been right. His big gun was empty, and her little revolver was pointing directly at his chest. She said,
"Drop it."
Chip stared at her for a moment. He let the gun fall from his hand. Kate's eyes followed the weapon as it clattered to the rooftop.
"Kate!"
Maggie yelled. Again, Kate was too late. She had made the same damn mistake she'd been making all week. Her eyes were looking in the wrong direction. Chip had dropped one gun, but with his other hand, he had reached behind his back and pulled out the other. Kate remembered the weapon from that first day of roll call. Chip had held it above his head for all to see. The Raven MP25. 6 in the magazine, 1 in the chamber.
"You have one bullet," Kate told him. "Unless it's magic, you can only kill one of us." "You sure about that count, Caitlin?"
Chip sounded calm. He could have been talking about the weather.
"Sure enough to bet your life?"
"I'll shoot you in the head."
"I taught you how to use that thing, sweetheart. You couldn't hit the side of a bus with a machine gun. Are you willing to bet your life on that?"
Kate struggled to keep the fear out of her voice. Her hands dripped with sweat. She hadn't cocked the hammer. Had Maggie already cocked it? Would she throw the gun onto the roof without the safety engaged? Chip said,
"Why don't you put down that gun before you hurt yourself?"
"Why don't you kiss my ass?"
Chip took the bait. Kate had his full attention now.
"I've been wanting to grab that ass since day one."
She held his gaze as she let her thumb travel up the side of the gun.
"I thought you already grabbed my ass."
"I sure as fuck did."
She felt the cylinder release, the metal backstrap that scooped underneath the hammer.
"Did you like it? You think I didn't know what you were doing?"
Chip was making Kate's mistake, no longer looking for threats.
"Pressing that tight ass against my cock, working your kike magic. I remember that day."
Kate felt the 3 ridges that scored the top of the hammer.
"You said the person with the most bullets always wins." "Oh, darling, I'm gonna win this."
"No, you're not." Kate pulled the trigger. The hammer was already cocked, the firing pin dropped, the bullet fired. Chip's shoulder jerked back, his gun went off, Maggie fell to the ground. For one heart-stopping second, Kate thought Maggie had been hit. but the bullet had pierced the asphalt a few inches from her leg. Kate heard a familiar noise.
Click, click.
Chip was pointing the gun at Maggie's head, but Kate had been right. The magazine was empty. He dropped the gun. He pulled open his shirt. Blood dribbled in a steady stream from his shoulder. The hole was black at the center, just like the holes he had put in his victims. Just like the hole in the roof that had almost been a hole in Maggie's head. The bright red blood cut a line down his torso and pooled into the waist of his pants. His chest hair was gray and splotchy. There was a tattoo of a red fox above his heart. Patrick's dog tags were around his neck. Kate stood up. She clutched the revolver in both hands. There was no more sweating. Her skin was cool. She was not afraid or panicked anymore. She was just certain that she was holding the gun that was going to kill this man. Take those off. Come and get them. Chip hooked his thumb through the metal chain. He actually winked at her. You better be careful, sweetheart. Your doorman sees a badge. He'll let anybody up. Give them back. Kate's voice was flat. She was dead inside. Dead as Patrick. Dead as Chip Bixby was going to be. Take them off right now. You really thought you could do this job? I said take them off. Even your own mama don't want you wearing the badge. Shut up, Kate ordered. That's what Lishbet told me. Her and your granny. I talked to them last week. He was lying. He had to be lying. Saw them Jew tattoos on their arms. You'd never guess it, right? Couple of blonde slits. Guess Hitler wasn't fooled. He smiled again. Too bad he didn't finish the job. Shut your goddamn mouth. Are you gonna finish the job, Caitlin? The smile had turned into a grin. Nice couch they got in the living room. What do you call that color? Turquoise? Kate was a statue. Her lungs stopped breathing. Her heart stopped beating. Her finger was frozen on the trigger. She could see Chip on the turquoise couch, sitting back, with his legs spread wide as if he owned the place. Oma and Lishbet would offer him cigarettes and cocktails. And why? Because they had no idea that a monster had talked his way into their home. Do it, Maggie said. Shoot him. Kate wanted to. With every ounce of her being, she yearned to pull the trigger. But she couldn't. Not because she didn't have it in her, but because Chip Bixby so obviously wanted her to. Even now, Kate could hear the men on the street. They had heard the gunfire on the roof. They were probably working their way up the stairs, clearing each floor as they made their way to the top. Chip had obviously heard them too, and he'd decided he'd rather be killed than taken alive. Kate put her finger back on the trigger guard. She told Maggie, "Handcuff him." When Maggie didn't move, Kate threw down her own set of cuffs. We're taking him in. You and me. We're arresting this asshole, and we're going to take him in. Maggie didn't move. Let's go, Kate told her. You and me, Lawson, not the guys. Us two tough gals are going to handcuff the great Chip Bixby and throw him in the back of our squad car and take him in. Maggie took her time coming around. She reluctantly picked up the handcuffs. I get to book him. I wouldn't presume to have it otherwise. Maggie clicked open the cuffs. She was now nodding as she worked it out in her head. I'll fingerprint him. Take his picture for the papers, toss him into the cell.
May I accompany you?
You mean when I put him in the cell?
Maggie smiled.
Sure. Both of us will throw him in a cell in front of all the bad guys.
No. Chip took a step back. Then another.
Fuck no.
Stop. Kate's finger curled around the trigger. Chip kept backing up.
You two snatches ain't taking me in.
Stop. Kate's voice was stronger now. She was walking toward him even as he kept walking away.
I'll shoot you again.
Chip didn't stop. He took another step back, then another, until his heels hit the parapet. He stepped up. He stepped out. He hung in the air for less than a second. Then he was gone. At first, neither Maggie nor Kate moved. Then they both rushed to the edge of the building. The scene below was eerily similar to the one they'd found when they arrived. Except this time, instead of Terry Lawson surrounded by a group of cops, it was Chip Bigsby, with a dozen guns trained on him. They needn't have bothered. Chip was obviously dead. His limbs were splayed. His skull had cracked open. Blood was everywhere.
Up there!
One of the cops shouted. Rick Anderson. He had his shotgun on his shoulder. Kate felt about a vertigo come on. She dropped to her knees so she wouldn't tumble after Chip. The revolver fell to her side.
Oh my God.
Maggie ran to Jimmy.
My God,
Kate repeated. What had just happened? She should have shot him. She should have put a bullet in his head before he jumped off the roof. Kate laughed. Was she really thinking that she should have killed Chip Bigsby before he killed himself? She heard her father's voice in her head. Talk about beating a dead horse. Her father, her Oma and mother. Kate shivered uncontrollably. Chip Bigsby had been in their house. He had sat in their living room, talked to Lisbeth and Oma. He had planned to take Kate away from her family. He had the place ready for her, a room where she could yell and no one would hear her scream. Kate would have been gone. Her family would have lived out the rest of their lives, never knowing what had happened to her. Just like Oma's father and mother, her brother and son. There one moment, vanished the next.
Kate! Maggie yelled. Kate, help me!
Maggie was using her teeth to tear the tape around Jimmy's head. Kate had to let this go. She had to bury it somewhere safe in her psyche where it couldn't hurt her. Chip was dead. Kate hadn't been his victim. She hadn't been anyone's victim. She was a police officer. She had a gun she'd used to stop a suspect. She and her partner had closed a case. Kate had helped solve a crime that had been haunting the city since before she'd even decided to put on the uniform. Her uniform. How many times had Chip watched her take off her uniform? Kate shook her head, trying to rid her mind of the terrible thought. She pushed herself up. She wiped her hands on her pants. She walked toward Maggie and Jimmy to see what she could do to help. Maggie finally tore through the tape. Jimmy groaned as the adhesive pulled away from his skin. Maggie wrapped her arms around her brother. They were both crying. Neither one of them spoke. Until Jimmy said,
I'm sorry. It's all right.
Maggie soothed. She stroked his back, kissed his cheek.
It's gonna be okay.
Everything's fine. Kate looked away. She felt tears in her eyes. She didn't know for whom she was crying. Herself, Patrick, Maggie and Jimmy, her parents, her Oma. Maybe Kate was just relieved. That was the lie that she would tell herself. She wasn't scared. She didn't feel hunted or violated at the most intimate level possible. She was just relieved.
You're okay, Maggie told her brother. You're safe now. Everybody knows.
Jimmy sobbed, like his sister had a few moments ago. He sounded resigned to the fate that awaited him.
Just shoot me, Maggie. Throw me off the roof before they do.
Maggie was crying too.
I won't let them hurt you. They'll have to come through me. It's too late.
He was clearly devastated.
I'm sorry. I'm so fucking sorry.
There were loud voices in the stairway. Kate could hear the footsteps pounding up the concrete treads.
Just kill me,
Jimmy begged.
Give me the gun and I'll do it.
No, Maggie wouldn't let him go.
Jimmy, I don't care. I don't care about any of it. All that matters is that you're okay. I'm not okay.
Yes, you are. She held him tighter.
We'll get through this. We will.
Jimmy didn't respond. He stared over Maggie's shoulder at the door, waiting for the judgment that was certain to come. There were more shouts echoing up the stairwell as the floors were cleared. Every man on the street was making his way up to the rooftop. Every man had probably heard what Terry Lawson had said to Maggie about his own nephew.
You let your faggot brother get away.
Kate said, Chip lied. They both looked up at her. She shrugged her shoulder.
He admitted it. Maggie asked, What are you talking about?
Kate spelled it out for them. Chip admitted that he lied about Jimmy right before he jumped off the roof. She put on her haughtiest buckhead tone.
Gosh, you guys were standing right here the whole time. Didn't you hear him say it too?
Day 4, Thursday. Chapter 34. Maggie sat in a chair outside Terry's hospital room. He was going to live. Maggie couldn't let herself get used to the idea. All day yesterday and through the night, she had let herself think that he wasn't going to make it. The doctors had said it would be touch and go for 24 hours. And here they were, on the other side, and Terry was still alive. Nobody knew what kind of life he was going to have. The bullet had grazed Terry's spine. There was a lot of swelling. Part of the bullet was still in there. There was no way the fragments could be safely removed. They didn't know if he would walk again. He couldn't feel anything below his waist. All that they knew was that he could breathe on his own, which meant that he could talk. Not that Maggie had spoken to her uncle. She stayed in the chair outside his room and watched the door. Terry's visiting hours were limited. There wasn't the usual steady stream of cops floating in and out. Delia and Lily cried too much to be with him for any length of time. The commissioner had come by, but he'd left 5 minutes later. Cal Vic stayed a little longer before the nurse kicked him out. Gail had wheeled herself up for a chat, but found out she wasn't allowed to smoke because of the oxygen, and wheeled herself back out. There was no sign of Mac McKay, Red Fleming, Les Leslie, or Jet Elliott. It fell to Bud Deacon to tell Terry about Chip. That conversation had gone on for almost an hour. Bud wouldn't look at Maggie when he left the room. Jimmy had talked to Terry this morning. That was all the information Maggie had. She had pressed her brother for details. Of course she had pressed him. That was what Maggie always did. Only this time, Jimmy hadn't done the things he always did back, which was yell at her. He just shook his head and told her everything was fine. Was it fine? Maggie had been downstairs. She'd heard the murmurs in the waiting room. She'd seen the way some of the other cops looked at Jimmy. All three of them had stuck to Kate's story about Chip's confession. But cops were naturally suspect. She assumed this was the reason that Red, Mac, Les, and Jet were staying away. They had worshipped Jimmy. What did it say about them if Jimmy turned out to be queer? What did it say about Terry Lawson that his nephew was gay? Maggie should have been relieved that the men were gone from their lives, but she was furious at them for abandoning her brother. They had mentored him. They had treated him better than they treated their own sons. She would never forgive them for turning their backs on him for something that was none of their goddamn business. Not that Jimmy seemed bothered by the betrayal. What happened on the roof outside the rail yard had changed a lot of things. But Jimmy Lawson still wasn't the type of guy to pour his heart out. And about the other thing, well, Maggie wasn't the type of gal to pour her heart out either. Kate, on the other hand, had done a complete 180 from the fresh-faced newbie who'd opened the locker room door too wide on her first day. She had some kind of liquid steel in her blood. Even when she'd seen the hundreds of pages on the clipboard they'd found in Chip Bigsby's car, all she had done was make a quip about how she preferred Jewess to Kike. Who knew what Kate was really thinking when she saw the lists of things that Chip was planning to do to her, or what she made of the surveillance reports that recorded her every waking hour from the moment Chip had met her on the shooting range, or the rants he'd scribbled about the Kikes and Spicks and Chinks ruining the world while good men like Chip Bigsby fought to put things right. Who knew about anything where Kate Murphy was concerned? She was such a fucking good liar. Or obfuscator, as Kate would probably prefer. At least she was using her skills for good. The amount of bullshit Kate put into her incident report was breathtaking. Oddly, none of the embellishments were for her own benefit. Officer Lawson drew Bigsby's attention by kneeling on the ground, which gave me the opportunity to move closer to the revolver. Had she not distracted him, I would not have been able to act. Bigsby. Maggie almost wished she'd been there when Terry was told the news. She wanted to see the look on his face. Not just one, but two men in Terry's life had managed to pull the wool over his beady little eyes. And part of her couldn't help but think that it just proved how full of shit Terry really was. He spent every waking hour complaining about the Kikes and slits and coloreds and liberals and feminists and everybody else who was ruining his perfect little world. What did he think would happen when somebody like Chip used his words as a call to action? Miss Lawson. The nurse came out of Terry's room. She held the door open for Maggie. He's asking for you. Maggie didn't know whether to laugh or check the woman's pockets for dope. Don't stay too long. The nurse wasn't joking. Taking care of Terry had obviously sucked all the life from her soul. He needs his rest. Maggie put her hands on her knees. She pushed herself up. Her body still ached from being thrown around. Her cheek was bruised black. Her neck was blue and yellow, her jaw popped from Terry punching her in the face. The lights were off in the room. but the glow of the equipment was enough to see by. Maggie had always felt comfortable in hospitals. She'd been visiting her father at Milledgeville for so many years that part of her thought of it as a second home. Terry was on an inversion bed to take the pressure off his spine. He was stomach down. The face cradle offered him a view of the floor. Long straps kept his arms and legs immobilized. Another strap wound around the back of his head. His hospital gown was open. Maggie could see the wings of his shoulder blades. 12 inches below, there was a large bandage where the bullet had torn into his flesh. A sheet covered the rest. Someone had painted a blue sky and fluffy white clouds on the tile directly below his face. There was a small mirror attached to an arm on the bed. The glass was tilted to show Terry's eyes and nose, though Maggie wasn't sure whether or not he could use it to see who was in the room. He said, "Move closer." Maggie couldn't understand him at first. His jaw was pressed into the face cradle. He could barely speak. "Closer." She moved closer. He was staring into the mirror. He could see her. "Where's Jimmy?" "He's back at work." Terry's nostrils flared.
"He has to quit."
Maggie didn't respond.
"He doesn't belong."
"You sound like Chip Bigsby." Terry's face was already red. His eyes were already bulging. Maggie didn't need the usual clues to figure out that he was furious with her. She felt it in her gut. She felt it with every breath, every beat of her heart. No matter how much she denied it, she was connected to Terry the same way she was connected to the sounds in her house. The slap of the phone cord, the bang of the cabinet, the crack of the egg in the bowl. Maggie sat down on the floor. She crossed her legs Indian style and leaned down just enough so that Terry could see her without the mirror. She said,
"I want to tell you something."
He stared straight ahead.
"You were wrong. Don't you want to know what you were wrong about?"
Terry's jaw bulged. Maggie quoted his favorite saying, "People don't take power. Somebody has to give it to them." She waited not for a response, but for her words to sink in. "You were wrong, Terry. I took the power. Kate Murphy took the power." He didn't look at her. He didn't look in the mirror. "I've been sitting outside your room all night thinking about this. Do you want to know what I figured out?" Maggie didn't wait for an answer this time. "I don't think you're really racist, or sexist, or anti-Jew, or anti-gay, or any of that bullshit. I think you're scared." Terry still wouldn't look at her. "You're terrified." She recalled Chip's words on the rooftop. "Your whole world's upside down. You don't belong anymore." Terry didn't respond, but Maggie could tell her words were hitting the mark. She said, "Chip didn't kill those cops because he hated them. He killed them because he couldn't stand the fact that they were changing things. And you made him see that when you planted the evidence against Spivey. That's what set him off. You know it, I know it. Spivey walked free, and 2 months later, Chip was murdering the same kind of people you blamed for making it happen." Terry's jaw clenched so hard that Maggie could see the outline of the bone underneath his skin. She said, "And the sad part is that Spivey walked because of you. The case was tight, but you couldn't leave well enough alone. You couldn't let a judge and jury decide on the facts." Maggie gave him time to think about what she was saying. Chip was paranoid. He was alone. His world was falling apart. And he couldn't handle it. Just like you. Terry trembled with rage. His flesh was mottled, sweat dripped onto the floor beneath him. That's what I wanted to tell you. That it was your fault. That the world isn't just changing. It's passing you by. Maggie smiled. Atlanta's still a cop town, Terry. You're just not the cop who's running it anymore. He finally broke his silence.
You fucking cunt.
Maggie couldn't stop smiling. She loved this too much. She could sit here all day letting out every word he had ever crammed back down her throat, and Terry couldn't do a damn thing about it. He said,
You think anything's gonna change?
I think the whole world is gonna change. For me, for Kate, for the blacks, for the browns, yellows, greens, for you. Especially for you. Terry looked at her now.
You're nothing. You know that. You're the streak in my fucking underwear.
Maggie saw his hand clench. She couldn't control her body's response. Every time his anger threatened to boil, her chest filled with mercury and her heart shot into her throat. Terry said,
Get the fuck out of here.
You don't tell me when to leave. Maggie got on her knees, put her face close to his.
You're not in charge anymore. Do you hear me? When I'm out of this bed.
You feel this? She rested her hand on the back of his neck. Terry's breath huffed out.
What are you doing?
Maggie walked her fingers down his neck. His skin was cold and dry.
I know you can feel my touch.
It's just everything below the waist that's gone, right?
Meh.
He couldn't finish her name. Sweat dripped onto the floor, ran across the painted tile.
They tell you the bullet's still in your spine?
She kept the pressure light on his neck. You're a quarter inch away from pissing and shitting in a bag for the rest of your life.
Don't.
She moved her hand down half an inch. Her finger found the place between the vertebrae at the base of his neck. Her touch got lighter, but she knew Terry would feel it like a jackhammer.
Tell me you're sorry. What?
He stuttered.
Tell me you're sorry.
Her mouth was by his ear. She hoped he felt the spit come out. She hoped his heart was trembling and his nerves were shaking and he was racked with the kind of fear that came when you were pinned down in bed and somebody was behind you doing whatever the fuck they wanted. Maggie pressed her fingers between his shoulder blades. She could feel the bone of his spine. The incision was 6 inches away. It would be so easy for her to press her fingers into the wound, push the bullet that quarter inch over.
Stop, Terry begged. Please.
Tell me you're sorry right now, or I'll slam my fist so hard into that bullet that it shits out your nose.
I'm sorry, he screeched. I'm sorry.
Are you sure?
Yes.
He was crying.
Please stop. I'm sorry, please.
Maggie removed her hand. She took her time getting up from the floor. She brushed off the back of her pants. She walked toward the door. She turned the handle. The nurse was in the hallway. She had obviously heard the noise. Is he okay? He's fine. I'll get his pain medication.
Maggie stopped her. He told me he doesn't want it.
Are you sure? I thought I heard him screaming.
That's what he does, Maggie said. He grits it out. You should see him at the dentist. It's awful to hear. He always makes the hygienists cry.
The nurse had been around Terry long enough to believe the story.
Well, that's what he wants. Trust me. I learned a long time ago, you don't argue with my uncle.
Maggie smiled at the woman.
He's a tough guy.
Day 8. Monday. Epilogue. Kate pulled her car into the parking lot down from the police station. She took the scarf off her head. Her sunglasses went into her purse. She thought about putting the top up on the convertible, but no one was going to steal a car from a police parking lot, even if it was a red Ford Mustang. She grabbed her belt off the passenger seat. The metal clips were in her front pocket. She looped them on her underbelt, then hooked on the utility belt. She clipped the transmitter at her back. She checked her pockets, gum, lipstick, notebook, citation book, pens. She checked her belt, flashlight on the hook, handcuffs in the pouch, shoulder mic threaded up to the epaulette, jack plugged into the transmitter, keychain attached to the ring, nightstick through the metal loop, holster secured around the belt, safety strap snapped over her gun. Her gun. Kate had shot a man with a gun very similar to this one. She had been aiming for his chest and winged his shoulder. But as her people would say, closeness only counts in taxes and horseshoes. Not that her people would ever know the truth about what happened on that rooftop. Even if she wanted to tell them, Kate could not find the words to explain how she'd really felt. She had wanted to kill Chip Bixby. Not the first time she'd shot him. That time, she'd just been desperate to stop him. And not just stop him from killing Maggie, but stop him from saying the awful things he was saying. Kate's white nightgown. Her purple blanket. Her Oma. The time Kate had wanted to kill him came when she had seen Patrick's dog tags. Rage had consumed her. She hadn't wanted to just murder him. She had wanted to empty her gun into his chest. And then she wanted to fill the holes with burning oil and dance in his still warm blood. She had felt dead inside. She had felt capable of anything. The fifth Kate reared her ugly head. This Kate wanted darkness. Her finger was on the trigger. She was ready to pull back, and then the other Kates took over. She wasn't sure which ones. The daughter, the widow, the cop, the whore. The real Kate, she wanted to think. The only Kate who mattered was the one who had taken charge on that roof. Her finger had moved from the trigger. Her hand had tossed Maggie the handcuffs. The real Kate was a good person, and she was not going to do a bad thing. Why had that happened? Because Kate had made a choice. She had pulled herself back from the abyss. She was not a vigilante. She was not Chip Bixby. Her job was to uphold the law. And that's exactly what Kate had done. And not just that. She had protected Maggie. She had saved Jimmy. She had saved herself. Sure, she'd urinated down her leg in the process. But thanks to Philip, Kate happened to have an extra pair of underwear in her pocket. She locked her car door, which was silly since the top was down, but it was a habit she was trying to develop. Kate scowled as she put on her hat. The band smelled of Jimmy Lawson's sweaty head, no matter how many lingerie sachets she stuck in it every night. At least the baking powder had absorbed the foul odor in his shoes. Small victories. Kate walked up the sidewalk. The air was crisp. The sun was out. Her nightstick banged against her leg. Her holster dug into the flesh. She wondered if she was going to develop a callus. That seemed like the sort of thing a doctor would know. Murphy. Jimmy Lawson was behind her. Kate slowed so he could catch up. She asked, "Good weekend?"
"The usual."
Kate glanced up at him. Jimmy had never struck her as the funny type. Maybe he was trying to make changes. Jimmy seemed different from a week ago, and not just because of the bruises that cut into his wrists. The anger that had lived inside him was starting to uncoil. Kate wondered when that had started. No one knew what had happened to Jimmy during the 18 hours Chip had held him hostage. Jimmy claimed all he remembered was hearing a noise downstairs in the kitchen. The next thing he knew, Chip was slapping him awake on the roof of the rail yard office building. There was no mention of the letter, which was fine with Kate. No matter how things really went down, she could only hope that nothing coiled Jimmy back into that angry person. Maggie needed him. The police force needed him. Though she wasn't certain how long Jimmy would last on the job. Despite what Kate felt was a fantastic performance, there were still rumors floating around the station. She'd thought that the girls were bad at her high school. As Kate had told her Oma the night before, there was no society more viciously controlled by rumor than your local police force. That was the only detail she had shared with Oma. Kate's picture had been in the newspaper. She let the journalist tell her family what had happened. And thanks to the police commissioner, the journalists did not know much. The truth about Chip Bigsby and his nauseating log were going to sit in police storage for the next 100 years. That is, unless Kate managed to move up somehow. She was certain detectives were allowed to access the storage rooms. Jimmy said, "Can I ask you a question?"
"It would be my pleasure."
"The bullets in the stairwell, what made you count them?" Kate gave a long sigh. "Tables reserved for four or more. Only 6 items allowed in the dressing room, 2 drink minimum." She shrugged. "I've been counting all my life."
"Jesus Christ," he muttered. "Didn't it ever occur to you that any one of those shots could have come from Maggie's gun?"
"Absolutely." She smiled up at him. "That thought occurred to me the minute I got home. I almost had a heart attack."
"Are you kidding me?"
"I wish I was." Kate had been in such a state that she'd stood under a hot shower until the water ran cold. "I never even considered that Maggie could have fired her gun.
Jesus help me, I was saved by Lucy and Ethel."
Jimmy was teasing her. There was no animosity in his tone. He indicated the steps up to headquarters.
"Ladies first."
"Gosh, thanks." Kate walked up ahead of him. As usual, there were cops crowded around the entrance. As usual, they didn't part for her to walk through. Kate turned around. She almost bumped into Jimmy. She said, "So I'll see you tonight." Jimmy's mouth opened in confusion, but Kate closed it with a kiss. It wasn't just any kiss.
Kate put on a good show.
Her hands caressed his neck. Her fingernails scratched his scalp. She literally knocked his hat off. Kate saw Jimmy picking it up from the stairs as she walked through the tarnished front doors. The gauntlet through the squad room wasn't as bad as the first day. Kate had learned so much since then. Such as the fact that it was called a squad room. She ignored the new penis drawing on the door to the woman's locker room. Kate cracked open the door and edged in. Maggie was alone. She stood at her locker.
You're early.
Don't get used to it.
I won't.
Kate smiled as she dialed the combination on her lock. Reflexively, she checked her pockets again. She had forgotten to bring cash.
Again.
Patrick's photo was in its usual place inside her wallet. Kate touched his beautiful face. Cal Vic had offered to return Patrick's dog tags, but Kate had politely declined. She was going to have to get a new apartment. Kate couldn't go back to the Barbizon, and though her father had told her she was more than welcome, she was too old to live in her parents' basement. Besides, one look at the footprints outside her bedroom window had convinced her she needed to live in a more secure space. Just thinking about Chip Bigsby watching her still made Kate ill. So she didn't think about it. Kate closed her wallet. I hear they've scheduled Jake Coffey's funeral for tomorrow.
Gail wants me to take her. You need a ride?
Kate thought about the last funeral she had attended. Patrick's remains had been flown to Atlanta from the other side of the world. There were bureaucratic snafus. A freak storm had hit Atlanta. 10 days passed before what was left of her husband finally made its way home. Kate had been so drugged by the time the funeral was held that she barely remembered the coffin being lowered into the ground. Maggie asked,
"You all right?"
"Absolutely," Kate fibbed. "I'll meet you at Gale so you don't have to make the drive into Buckhead."
"Buckhead," Maggie grumbled. "Listen, just to warn you, Gale's thinking about getting her PI license."
Kate slapped her hand to her mouth. Maggie knew what was coming.
"Everything can't be a joke, Kate."
"Cyclops investigations?"
"Stop it."
Maggie's head disappeared inside her locker. Her voice was muffled.
"Keeping an eye out for trouble."
"Oh, well done."
"Good morning, ladies."
Wanda Clack squeezed past the door. Her smile dropped.
"Another cock drawing."
"Really?"
Kate said. "I thought the shading gave it an air of realism."
"I'll bow to your expertise, Mrs. Lawson."
Maggie said.
"What?"
"You didn't know your partner's dating your brother?"
Wanda sat down on the bench.
"They were making out in front of the station house. Half the squad saw 'em."
Maggie looked at Kate. Kate shrugged.
"I can't believe it's Monday again. Every fucking week."
Wanda leaned back and opened her locker. She loaded her belt with her nightstick, handcuffs, transmitter.
"I met a stone fox on Saturday, looked like Al Pacino but shorter. He took me dancing and dining and then found out I was a cop and sneaked out the bathroom window. Stuck me with the check."
She huffed a laugh.
"Guess I'm lucky he didn't have a gun taped to the back of the toilet."
Maggie was smiling the way she did, only when she was really happy.
"You could always date a cop."
"I'll leave that to the young and stupid. Right, Murphy?"
"Absolutely."
The door opened wide. A terrified young woman stumbled into the room. Her hands were clasped over her breasts. Her hat was down in her eyes. Her uniform was 3 sizes too large.
"Jesus Christ."
Charlene Compton came in behind her. She pushed the door closed with both hands.
"What the hell were you thinking? We could have naked women in here."
The new girl's mouth worked. She looked ready to run out the door. She probably would have if Charlene hadn't been blocking the way. Wanda said,
"Look at her. She's terrified."
"Like a deer caught in the headlights."
Charlene feigned sadness.
"Poor thing won't last a week."
Kate openly studied the new girl. She had dark hair and a wholesome appearance. She was attractive, except for the unbridled terror.
Wanda asked, "What's your name, sweetheart?"
"Beth Dawson."
Wanda said,
She reminds me of that chick from Laugh-In. What's her name?
Lily Tomlin? Charlene suggested.
Judy Carn.
Ruth Buzzy.
Wanda clapped her hands together. I'm gonna call you Buzzy. Charlene looked at her watch.
I gotta call my sister, make sure she doesn't stick my kid in her trunk instead of taking him to school.
Better get out of here before the colored girls come.
Wanda slapped Kate's leg. Kate helped lever her up. Instead of leaving, Wanda grabbed Dawson by the shoulders.
Listen up, Buzzy. A word of advice, stay away from Jimmy Lawson. He's Murphy's over there.
She shook the woman like a sack of laundry.
Trust me, you don't want to fuck with Murphy. She just shot a man to watch him cry.
Wanda cracked open the door and slid out into the squad room. Maggie told Kate.
Vic told me we're partnered. That work for you?
Gosh, I'm thrilled.
Kate couldn't help herself. She really was thrilled. Still, Maggie was shaking her head as she crabbed out through the door. Kate zipped her purse. She patted her pockets one last time. She slammed her locker closed. Dawson jumped. She was standing in the corner, her hands still clutched her breasts. Her hat was so low, Kate couldn't make out the color of her eyes. Kate said,
"Take your hands off your breasts."
Dawson moved her hands. Her purse dropped to the floor. She leaned down to retrieve it and hit her head on the doorknob. Kate willed herself not to smile.
"Do you have a lock?"
The woman was too petrified to speak. "A combination lock." Dawson shook her head. She put her hat back on. The brim dipped into her eyes. She pushed it back up. Kate opened her locker.
"You can use mine today. Get one for yourself by tomorrow. There's a sporting goods store on Central Ave near the university. Wear your uniform, and they'll give you the lock for free."
Dawson didn't move. Kate grabbed the woman's purse and threw it into her locker. "Never open the door all the way or the guys can see in. Don't wear the dress socks they gave you. Franklin Simon has wool ones, 2 for $1, but I prefer cashmere from Davison's. Either way, get something thick that will help keep your feet in your shoes. And find a stapler for your pants. Those bobby pins won't hold. Trust me. You'll end up looking like the Scarecrow from Wizard of Oz. And speaking of looking, always take in your surroundings, up, down, left, right, front, back, sideways. You can take off your hat." Dawson took off her hat.
"You see this curtain?"
Dawson looked at the curtain.
"The colored girls change back there. They get the room 10 minutes before roll call. That's the rule. They don't like it when we're in here, and we won't like it if you piss them off. Understand?"
Dawson's head moved like the ball in a typewriter. Somewhere in her brain, she was trying to record all of this information. Instead of slowing down, Kate went faster.
"You won't get arrested for altering your uniforms. There's a tailor on 14th who'll take care of you. He's Jewish, but reasonable. What else? Oh, toilets are upstairs. It's a tight squeeze, only 2 stalls. Don't spray your hair in front of the mirror or someone will kill you. I'm serious. We all carry guns. I'm Kate, by the way."
Kate offered her hand. Dawson hesitated, then tentatively reached out to shake Kate's hand. Welcome to the Atlanta Police Department. This concludes the reading of Coptown, a novel by Karen Slaughter. Copyright 2014 by Karen Slaughter Publishing, LLC. This book was read by Kathleen Early. This unabridged recording was produced in 2014 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.blackstoneaudio.com. downpour.com. Thank you.